Welcome to Portland Sound Legacy Project on KBOO 90.7 FM Portland. I'm your host, Robert Davis, with my co-host, Michael LeClaire. Today, we will continue our journey through our music history with people that sounds like have shaped Oregon and the Pacific Northwest's unique music identity, one story at a time. Today's guest is a remarkable example of that Oregon spirit. They always include artists who lives in songs, musicians who carry family history, working traditions, regional culture, deep personal stories into the music, and they create and who have played in and around Portland for over 20 years plus. Today, live here in Aurora, Oregon, we welcome 2020 winner of the International Western Music Association Hall of Fame, 2021 IWMA Entertainer of the Year Award, 2003 Western Music Association Female Vocalist Performer of the Year Award, 2003 Western Music Association Song of the Year Award, 2002 Academy of Western Artists Entertainer of the Year Award, and 2018 Lucky 13 Academy of Western Artists Album of the Year Award country music star Joni Harms. Her songs celebrate farmers, ranchers, cowboys, family, resilience, and the Western way of life, while her career has remained firmly connected to her Oregon roots. She is a singer, songwriter, rancher, and one of the enduring voices of country and Western music, an artist whose career has taken her from her family's Oregon farm to Nashville, the Grand Ole Opry, Carnegie Hall, international stages, and the International Western Music Association Hall of Fame. Please welcome Joni Harms.
Hey, thank you for having me on the show today, boys. I'm really excited to be here with you. I'm sorry we've had kind of a back and forth time getting this day finally put together where we can have our visit, but by golly, we're doing it, and I'm excited to visit with you.
You're worth the wait.
you are definitely worth the wait. You know, we haven't seen each other or haven't worked together for many years. I think it's been about 12 years since you and I worked together at my sound company, AAA Sound, and you were at Walk in the Park.
That's right.
In Carlton, and that was many years ago. So your family roots in the Canby area reach back through generations, and the family farm has remained central to your life. Question, would you take us back to your childhood and describe the Oregon home, family, and landscape that shaped you?
Absolutely. I'm proud to do that. Our place has been in my family for 150 years now. It was homesteaded by my great-great-grandfather in 1872. It is Harms place through and through, has raised just about everything at one point in its lifetime. My great-great-grandfather came over from Germany and homesteaded there, and the first thing he built was a barn.
Oh, fabulous.
And that barn is still there, and I'm in fact doing some concerts there and now in that old barn, which is pretty special. But they homesteaded there, and off some of the timber on the property built the barn and lived there with their animals until they could also build a house.
What I'm seeing in my head is barn raising. Did they have a barn raising?
Probably.
Where the neighbors
I wasn't
came?
Around to see.
Well, yeah, that would be true, yes.
But no, it was a place that they made home and then eventually built a house. You know, it's just a very special place. I've traveled all around the world, but there's nothing like coming home there and walking that piece of ground that I know has been in my family for such a long time.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
Yep.
So published accounts describe music, horses, agriculture, and rural life as overlapping parts of your upbringing. What did everyday life on the farm teach you that later found its way into your songwriting and your career?
great question, but absolutely one I love to answer. I worked hard. I mean, that was what we all had to do as kids. My brother Buck is 10 years older than I am, and my sister Chris is 11 years older. So I think I was kind of one of those flu symptoms that my mom had and said, I don't know what's going on, John. But anyway, I came along just the same and jumped right into the hard work and also the music that was already going on. My dad played just about every kind of an instrument you could put in his hands.
Oh, musical, I see.
And my mother was very, very good at writing. She was kind of a poet. And so
that's how
them,
you got those credentials.
Yes. And,
yeah.
And everybody played. My brother also picked up Dad's traditions of being able to, you know, sing and play the accordion and the guitar and the banjo and all these different things. My sister, Chris, played the piano. And so it was a very musical family, which I thought that when I grew up, I thought everybody's family was that way,
but they're not, are they? Yeah.
But no, I jumped right in the middle of it and started learning harmonies and just fell in love, obviously, with music and the farm and ranch life. And there was lots of cowboys. We did a lot of rodeos, worked hard with our cattle. My family raised cattle and then later Christmas trees as well. And like I said earlier, we have had just about every kind of a critter on that place at one time or another.
I see, sure.
But no, it was the real farm life, and it still is, and I'm proud that I get to keep it going and raise Luke and Olivia out there and really feel blessed that Luke is carrying on. He's going to be the sixth generation on that
ranch.
Oh,
my.
And then, so he's carrying on with the farming and working at Pepe for John Deere. And then Olivia is carrying on the music. So I'm a pretty lucky mom, I think.
Absolutely. So on the early turning points in your story came through FFA talent competition and performing before large audiences. When did you first realize that singing could become more than something you just simply loved to do?
Well, I sang at Mulala Buckaroo when I was 5.
Oh.
And so I sang for the cowboys up at my aunt had a large house up there, and there wasn't a whole lot of hotels or anything at that time, so she housed a lot of the cowboys for the rodeo, and I sang for them. When I was 5, I think I sang I Want to Be a Cowboy's Sweetheart and Ragtime Cowboy Joe, something
absolutely,
like that.
Absolutely, yeah.
But no, I knew it then, and then I think really, like you were mentioning, the FFA, Future Farmers of America, when I got to go back to the convention there, it was in Kansas City, and my goodness, I got a little band put together, two guys from New Mexico and another one from Minnesota, and we put a little band together, and I wrote a song called I'm a Country Girl. And I sang that and got a standing ovation from 5,000 FFA kids. And I said, okay, I've got the bug more than ever.
Oh,
this is what I'm put on earth to do.
Yep. So let's listen to one of your songs recorded live today in Aurora. Let's listen.
Hey, Robert, what would you like me to do for the K-Boo? We're getting all you guys, your applause and your sounds you're making is all being recorded tonight. It's going to be on a show on K-Boo Radio in the next couple weeks. And I just did an interview with them prior to the show here tonight. Robert, what can I sing for you? What would you like to hear?
How about some Merle Haggard, anything?
Well, let's do a couple of Merle. How about my original Merle and then another Merle Haggard? That work for you?
Sounds great.
Okay. Well, I hope we got some Merle Haggard fans out there. This is, all right. One that I wrote that's on my Lucky 13 album. This is one that I wrote for Merle right after he passed. Born in 1937, he grew up in an old boxcar. Who'd think a lonesome fugitive would make it very far?
Thank you, sir.
But with a jail cell for a schoolhouse and an old six-string guitar, somehow this branded man became a country star. He was a Yokie from Muskogee, and he sang his songs with pride. We all stood right beside him, walking on the fighting side. I'll bet he never knew it, but he broke ground and led the way for so many of us in the music industry today. No one could write a song the way that you could, Merle. Songs folks could understand, make us cry. They'll be sung forever, country heroes never die. I'll bet he's up in heaven, wearing silver wings, and that velvet voice is singing, bending guitar strings. And I'll bet a choir of angels were there to welcome you, and Hank and George and Johnny were standing right there too. No one could write a song the way that you could, Merle. Songs folks could understand all around the world. Some would make us laugh, some would make us cry. They'll be sung forever, country heroes never die. Ah, no one could write a song the way that you could, Merle. Songs folks could understand all around the world. Some would make us laugh, some would make us cry. They'll be sung forever, country heroes never die. Ah, they'll be sung forever. Merle Haggard, your songs will never die. Thank you.
Welcome back to our Portland Sound Legacy Project. I'm Michael LeClaire. We are talking with singer, songwriter, and megastar Joni Harms today. Rodeo has always become part of your public life, including rodeo queen competitions and singing the national anthem. How did the rodeo world help teach you how to connect with an audience and carry yourself as a professional performer?
Oh, it helped me so much. Those people, rodeo fans, once they, you know, hear you and like you, they become like family, and they support you and follow you and do whatever they can to make sure you continue with your gigs.
Oh, that's fabulous.
And I actually had 5 different rodeo queen titles. I started out as Princess of the Mullala Buckaroo, and then Queen of the Mullala Buckaroo, Miss Rodeo Oregon, Miss Northwest Rodeo, and then went back to compete for Miss Rodeo America, and was in the top 5.
Wow.
So I had a lot of years.
Fabulous.
of rodeo queen experience. And, I mean, it really, really does just get you out in front of people, make you comfortable talking with people. For me, singing in front of people.
Being seen.
Yes, being seen. Yeah. And help you kind of understand really how to present yourself, I think, in a ladylike way, and really... really make some friends and fans.
And all that riding a horse, too, right?
Correct, absolutely. Yeah. That's kind of like people have asked me, you know, is it like a beauty competition? And I said, to some degree, but you have to be able to ride a horse.
Ride a horse. And you got to look good. And you have to look good doing it, which you absolutely do. Sitting here in front of this microphone today, lady, you're looking fabulous.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome. So, moving on to your Western identity came from lived experiences rather than stage costumes. So when you began performing country music, did you already understand that ranch life and Western culture would eventually become central to your artistic voice?
I think so, because it was always extremely important to me to be who I was, who I am. I didn't want to be anybody else. And you know, when I started getting into the Nashville scene, having things happen there, I really couldn't be swayed to be anybody but who I was, and didn't want to be, because I knew that someday, you know, I would have to look back and be proud of whatever it is that I've done, and I can say that, and I really am proud of my background and my heritage in the Harms family and where I come from, and you know, it's been really special to take it almost, well, many places around the world, and let people kind of pretend they're a cowboy or a cowgirl or a ranch person just by me taking them there through my music.
Absolutely. A especially important piece of your Oregon recording history is the early 1981 single, Your my blanket. So what do you remember about making those early recordings in Portland, and what did that session mean to you at that stage in your career? And I told you we'd go way back.
Oh, how exciting. That's kind of fun to go back there. I was so excited about that. I mean, I'd never really had the experience of being in a studio before, and just really even hearing my voice through... I mean, you know, we had the old little cassette recorder thing, and I would
right.
certainly use that to write some of my music and things to hear how it sounded. But being in a real studio was very... And then that single, believe it or not, was picked up by a gentleman who had a pretty big following and shared a radio following in Canada. And we had some pretty good success with Hear My Blanket up there. I'm going, because I'm sorry, you pulled me into something I didn't really know that I'd be talking about. His name, but he had a show up there. He played it on his country music show, something kind of like it would have been, you know, like, not the Grand Ole Opry, but he had a Canadian show that was pretty big, and he played that on there, and that was huge for me.
I see.
Wow, I've made it now.
Absolutely. So, Joni, let's listen to another one of your songs recorded live here in Aurora. Let's listen.
Anyway, what a beautiful setting out here in Aurora Vineyards. And so I want to do this one that Dolly wrote. It's on my gospel album. It's called God's Coloring Book. Today, as I was walking down the field down by the way, I sat down on a fallen log to pass the time away. And as I looked around me, the more that I did look, the more I realized that I was viewing God's coloring book. I saw a golden ray of sunlight, a silver drop of dew, a soft white floating cloud sailing across the skies of blue, a yellow dandelion, a pretty evergreen, and some red and orange flowers growing wild along the stream. And the more I looked around me, the more that I did look, the more I realized that I was viewing God's coloring book. The grayness of an old man's hair, pink in baby's cheeks, the blackness of a stormy sky, the brown and fallen leaves, and the multicolored rainbow stretched out across purple haze of sunset just before the night. And the more I looked around me, the more that I did look, the more I realized that I was viewing God's coloring book. Then I turned my face towards the sky and say a silent prayer. And though God doesn't speak to me, He's with me everywhere. Yes, He's all around me. He's everywhere I look, and each new day is just a new page in God's coloring book. Mm-hmm. Yes, every day is just a new page in God's coloring book. God's coloring book.
Welcome back to our Portland Sound Legacy Project. I'm Michael LeClaire, and we're talking with singer-songwriter Joni Harms. Joni, you also performed around Oregon before the national record deals, including the Joni Harms Country Class Show. What was the Oregon country music circuit like for a young artist trying to build a following at the time?
Wow, good question, Mike. I was playing at with a band I had called Country Class, and we were playing up at a country club, as in golf course country club, in Salem. And, you know, we played there five nights a week, and I played, did my dues. I played the 9 to 1 a.m. show. And, you know, it was not the easiest road, but I made a lot of fans, and I really learned a lot. And it was, you know, it wasn't long before after that I kind of went out more on my own and started doing solos at like Blackfeet Ranch over in Eastern Oregon, and then some of the resorts over on the coast, and doing just a solo show because I could hone in on my songwriting and also my guitar playing skills, because I had to do it by myself rather than have a backup band. And so, but all of those memories are great, and just always knew where I was headed for some reason. I mean, there was never a desire to go to college for me. I knew that I was put on earth to play music, and I was going to do pretty much whatever it takes to get where I needed to go.
Sure, yeah. So moving forward, eventually you began making trips to Nashville, and your songwriting and demos brought you into contact with people such as Brian Gilmore, Jimmy Bowen. Can you tell us how Nashville first opened for you and what those early trips felt like coming from Oregon?
Absolutely. You know, it's not an easy way to open doors in Nashville. Never has been. I don't think it ever will be.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was able to do a four-song demo, which, believe it or not, over a golf game, Jimmy Bowen,
many of them,
McFadden, and my attorney, Ralph Gordon, at the time, all got together and brought Byron Gallimore, who was the one who had done the four-song demo, who was also on that four panel of golf players, won that day, or did the highest score. And he got his music for everybody else. And so he took in his new demo of this young Oregon girl, Joni Harms. And Mr. Bowen, legendary Jimmy Bowen, who is known for producing as far back as Frank Sinatra, George Strait, Reba McEntire, to my voice and my song, invited me to come back and meet with him. And boy, that was an exciting time.
Joni, your early national recordings included I Need a Wife, The Only Thing Bluer Than His Eyes, followed by the Capitol album Hometown Girl. What did you learn about the Nashville record business during the major label period, both musically and personally?
Well, there's no guarantees. Just because you get
yeah.
doesn't mean...
Yeah.
You know,
straight up on that.
I went through several changes. First, I was signed to MCA Records, and Jimmy Bowen was there. Then he came to the manager that I had gone with, because he was also part of that little golf team. His name was Larry McFadden, who managed Lee Greenwood, Nell Tillis, several other artists, and he pretty much was the one that was going to manage me because he was part of that golf game.
Golf game.
Yes. So anyway, he suggested that I go ahead and change over to Universal Records, because Jimmy Bowen was opening his own label, and that was what he was calling was Universal Records. So that paused a little bit of time. But then they also signed me to my first publishing deal, and I got to meet and learn to write with some of the best songwriters in Nashville at the time. And Dan Tyler, who had written wonderful things. For the first time we got together, we wrote the song I Need a Wife, which is just a novelty song, really, that I had heard a friend or two of mine say, you know, that had gotten married.
That he needed a wife, yeah.
But they'd gotten married and had children and saying, you know, boy, it's a lot to juggle all these things.
Oh, sure.
Have a job and a husband and a child. And so we wrote that song, and that was my first single. And I also did a video for Bluer Than His Eyes. And then Jimmy Bowen decided that he wanted to take over Capitol Records instead again and dissolve the Universal label right about the time my album was supposed to
come. Oh, wonderful.
It was a year
old
after I'd had two top 20 singles.
Ooh.
Before my album came out that people could buy. And that was heartbreaking, but I had my hopes, and they went back in, and I worked with James Stroud, another well-known producer at the time, and kind of what they called freshen up the album that I was releasing. And so it finally came out on Capitol Records, but At that time, Capitol Records was pretty much the home.
Okay.
Like everybody else on the label.
Took second place yeah.
And so things didn't work out like I had hoped and planned for that. And several of us got released for no real reason from Capitol Records.
Oh, my.
Not because we weren't doing our job, but because there was all the promotion going towards
Garth, yep.
And so that was heartbreaking. But then I got signed to Warner Brothers Records and thought I'd really found my home because it was called Warner Western.
Oh.
And that was where Don Edwards, Michael Martin Murphy, Emmylou Harris, several people were on that label at that time. And I felt like it was much more of a home for me because it was more my style of music.
I see. Uh-huh.
And so things kind of took off there for a while, and then that label dissolved as well, right about the time that I had been
Wow.
I had it within People Magazine, USA Today. They were putting a single of mine out on country radio that didn't end up going anywhere. So, I mean, you know, don't let anybody tell you that the music business is all fun.
That's exactly where
it's an uphill climb.
It's up and down and up and down.
Oh, my God. Yep, yep.
So let's share another one of the tunes that you've recorded today here in Aurora.
It's Dolly Parton, everybody. Oh, I love you. Thank you for all you did for so many of us. Welcome to heaven, and there's no doubt in my mind that's where she is. The song that I happened to be singing that night when she came up and gave me that wonderful compliment was one that I wrote called Catalog Dreams. I don't know if you've ever heard this one or not, but it's on my Cowgirl Dreams album. I want to play that one for you. Yeah, it goes like this. She could see herself a-sewing on that brand new machine as she took the time to look through that mail order magazine. It would sure make her life easier with all she has to do, but family needs come first. She'll have to wait a year or two. Thanks, Bailey. But it came from Sears and Roebuck, 1,000 pages long, everything from A to Z anyone could ever want. Putting away a little extra ain't as easy as it seems, so way out here we dream catalog dreams. Dad came in from working, tired as a dog. He sat down by the fire and picked up that catalog. His eyes fell on the tractor, the mow and arm and rake, but he knew that kind of money was more than he could ever make. But it came from Sears and Roebuck, 1,000 pages long, everything from A to Z anyone could ever want. But putting away a little extra ain't as easy as it seems, so way out here we dream cattle. Supper time was over, Daddy turned to me and said, wanna do a little dream and take that catalog to bed. And up there in the quiet, laying all alone, well, I stumbled on a page, started to dream all of my own. Cause if I could learn to play on that silver tone guitar, maybe make a record, one day be a star. Daddy'd have his tractor and Mom her new machine. I'd buy them all of their catalog dreams. I wanna buy them all of their catalog dreams. Thank you so much.
So, welcome back. Hometown Girl, they placed you in the studio with highly accomplished Nashville musicians. And we were just talking about this. Was there a particular recording session, musician, or moment, that period when you thought, hey, I'm really here. This is happening.
Well, all of the musicians I had the pleasure of working with, they're in the studio. They were all the top, as they call them, A-class musicians.
Sure.
It was amazing to sit back and watch them, because we would take like a little demo that I had recorded with just a guitar vocal. They would listen to it one time. The producer would say, okay, guys, this is the song, and this is the key. And then they would go in there, and in two or three takes, the magic would happen, as I call it, and you'd hear this beautiful song come together from something that was really nothing.
Wow.
That, and yeah, it was amazing for me to just stand there and sing in the studio. And, you know, they do it where the musicians first to do the bass line,
right,
and a scratch vocal, as they call it.
Absolutely.
And they come back in and add another layer of some of the lead parts, and then you finally do your lead vocals and harmony vocals. And so it's several steps that are put into making final product. It's quite a process, but it's beautiful to be able to watch it happen, and it really is magical.
So we're going to break now for another station ID. I'll be right back. You're listening to Community Supported KBOO Portland since 1968 at 90.7 FM, 104.3 FM Corvallis, 91.9 FM Hood River, and streaming online at kboo.fm/listen-now. As a listener-supported nonprofit, it's our members who keep us on the air with your ongoing donations. So please continue to support us by going to kboo.com/donate or text KBOO to 44321 to donate now.
Welcome back to our Portland Sound Legacy Project conversation with country music star Joni Arms. I'm Michael LeClaire. Joni, one of your most revealing parts of your story is that national success did not convince you to abandon Oregon. When the music business was pulling you toward Nashville, why was remaining on your family's Oregon land so important to you?
Well, because of the history, mostly. Because, you know, I mean, as I told you in the beginning of our interview, homesteaded in 1872, I knew that was solid, and the music business, as I've been talking about, is ever-changing, and there's no guarantees. So it's only a flight away, a day, you know, I can be in Nashville in a matter of hours. And so I chose to go back and forth, and I worked for several different publishing companies through the years, and spent a lot of time in Nashville and loved every minute. But moving there lock, stock, and barrel was not in the cards for me.
Yeah. No, I understand. So Cowgirl Dreams seemed to bring you your recorded music such more closer to the life you were actually living. Wow. So, Joni, did Cowgirl Dreams feel like the moment when your records finally caught up with who Joni Harms really was?
Great question. Absolutely. And, you know, I mean, not that the earlier recordings weren't me, because they were, but I think when I had the opportunity to record Cowgirl Dream, it was really the Warner Western project, and it was with a team of people that totally understood what I was trying to do, who I really was.
Well, that's a big help.
Yeah, and I was writing with my wonderful co-writer, Hobo Jim Verhoes. We were both writers at Ann Murray's Publishing Company, and the first day that we met, we wrote two songs the first day that I ended up recording. And so it was one of those magical marriages as songwriters. Really great. And I had not done very much co-writing before. I'd always written songs for myself.
See.
But Jim and I just totally hit it off and wrote some of my favorite songs, and a lot of Cowgirl Dreams album is songs we wrote together, as are several of the other albums. But yeah, it seemed like, and they didn't want me to put hair extensions in my hair, wear different outfits than what they were happy with the cowboy hat and cowboy boots.
Oh, and, wow, isn't that great?
Shows,
yeah.
The saddle across the pasture. You know, it was definitely an album that was focused on who I really am.
So I'm curious, I'm going to go off script here. You said Hobo. Is that his pseudonym, or is that his nickname, or is that his real name?
He is well known in Alaska, which, by the way, I'm off this week to do the Alaska State Fair once again, and he is the Alaska Balladeer. He passed away a year or so ago, sadly, but Hobo Jim Verhoes wrote I Did the Iditarod, and I mean, if he wasn't in Nashville, he was in Alaska. And he was just such a talented songwriter, and I guess he just went on the road as a young boy because he knew that he wanted to be in the music business. And he did kind of like Merle Haggard, whatever it took. He'd get on trains, he would hitchhike, he would do whatever it took to get to a next place to play some music.
Oh my
so
God.
He acquired the name Hobo Jim.
That's a great story. I love it. So, Joni, let's listen to one of your songs.
Met her at a rodeo down in San Antonio. Didn't take him long to know she wasn't from round here. She kept going on and on about her home in Oregon. Soon as he knew she was gone, his eyes were filled with tears. She left Texas making tracks in her old blue Cadillac, horse trailer on the back, on to that next show. It hurt him bad to see her go. He loves the girl, but she don't know he's got a plan that's not about to fail. He's gone on that Oregon trail. He begged his brother for his car. His would never get that far. He'd leave today and not tomorrow. She was moving on. Texas making tracks in her old blue Cadillac, horse trailer on the back, on to that next show. It hurt him bad to see her go. He loves the girl, but she don't know he's got a plan that's not about to fail. He's gone on that Oregon trail. For days and nights he put the miles behind him, through country like he'd never seen before. Staring at her picture on the dashboard, thinking about what he'd say when he showed up at her door. 'Cause she left Texas making tracks in her old blue Cadillac, horse trailer on the back, on to that next show. Hurt him bad to see her go. Loves the girl, but she don't know he's got a plan that's not about to fail. He's gone on that Oregon trail. Long gone on that Oregon trail.
Welcome back to our Portland Sound Legacy Project conversation with Joni Harm. So the phrase, let's put the Western back in country, became almost a statement of purpose. What did you believe country music was losing, and what did you want to put back into it?
Great question again, Mike. I wrote that song with my buddy Wood Newton in Nashville, and you know, we were just talking one day about how country music was losing some of the real Western side of it. And, you know, not that it's ever been bad, and I'm not one to criticize any kind of music. I mean, there's something for everybody.
Absolutely.
But, yeah. I definitely grew up on the more Western side of country music, living on a ranch, and just really liking the steel guitar and the fiddle sound.
Yeah.
And didn't want to see that go away, not in my music.
Mr. Mike loves steel guitar, boy.
I'm Dave Graff.
Shout out to Dave Graff.
He's on our CD as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, I guess that was really what inspired that song. I I think I came up with the title, and then Wood just latched right on, and we wrote the song. But it's kind of become one of my theme songs because it really says, you know, that's what's, you know, what happened to the country western.
Yeah.
It's
well,
you know, country, and then there's the western. Well, I grew up when they were one thing.
And yours is more into country, as in western, because of your upbringing in Canby and your farm and everything. And is that the direction Olivia's going to?
I would say she's a little more modern, but on the same hand, it's definitely the traditional sound. She carries a fiddle and a steel in her band, the Roadrunners, and they are great, and absolutely she really wants to carry on the traditional side of things as well, and that's always all I've wanted to do it. You know, I mean, it's just really who I am, and it's not country music to me without fiddle and steel.
Absolutely.
Songs such as Cowboy Up, Bless the Farmer, Catalog Dreams, and Merle each carry a different kind of story. Now, I personally, one of my favorites from hearing you helping Bob do sound in Carlton was Montana Moon. But I digress. Is there one song in your catalog whose story is especially personal to you, and why?
Boy, you know, my songs and my CDs, albums are like my children, so it's hard for me to choose one over the other. But I suppose one of my very, very favorite...
Perfect.
Very, very favorite songs is called Catalog Dreams. I remember writing that. I wrote that with Jim Fairhouse, Hobo Jim. Mm. And, you know, it was... The song came about by my dad telling me how... When he was a boy, his sisters and brother and him would get excited about this time of year, September, October, and take turns going down to get the mail and look for that Sears and Roebuck catalog to arrive. And when it finally did, they would take their turns flipping through the pages, just dreaming about what they would buy if they had the mail. And I really love that song. It's touched a lot of people. And as I was mentioning at the beginning when we were just chatting a little bit, that I played that song on the Grand Ole Opry when Miss Dolly Parton was there. And I finished and was just walking off stage, and she made the effort to come up to me and say, I absolutely loved that song, Joni. I love the presentation of it. I love your voice. I love the way you dress. And, you know, she said it kind of reminds me of my song, Quite a Many Colors, which to me, that is my favorite song of all time.
And that's And that's a very high compliment, given the fact that just last week, unfortunately, Dolly Parton had passed away, and she is no longer with us. She got her wings, and she is up, looking down on us, making sure that we carry country music forward in maybe her style.
And you know, only one Dolly. That's another.
Praise from Dolly is high praise indeed.
Absolutely.
Oh, gosh, yes.
You betcha. So we're going to play another one of your songs.
For so many years, we've rode side by side. Now we're parting trails, but before we do, my dear old friend, here's a blessing to you. May the hot blazing sun shy away from your hat. Come a cold biting wind, let it be to your back. May you and your pony live long and bright, through pastures aplenty with the Lord by your side. When you bed down at night neath a blanket of stars, may you peacefully rest
with joy in your heart. Wherever you are and whatever you do, just know, my old friend, I'll be praying for you. May the hot blazing sun shy away from your hat. Come a cold biting wind, let it be to your back. May you and your pony live long and ride through pastures aplenty with the Lord by your side. Somewhere down the trail, we'll meet again. The good Lord willing, forever we'll ride through pastures aplenty with the Lord by our side. And the hot blazing sun will shy away from our hats. Come a cold biting wind, let it be at our back. The Lord by our side. Amen.
Welcome back. You're listening to Portland Sound Legacy Project on KBOO Radio 90.7 FM. I'm Robert Davis with my co-host, Michael LeClaire. Joni's career eventually carried these Oregon root songs far beyond the Pacific Northwest. So, Joni, your career has included the Grand Ole Opry, Carnegie Hall, international touring, and major recognitions from Western music community. Of all these milestones, which one made you stop and think about how far you had traveled from that young Oregon singer?
What a wonderful question, Robert. I loved all the things I've done. None of the awards, none of the anything like that. But I will admit that, you know, I remember even the first time that I've had the pleasure of playing there many times, but the first time when I was standing in the circle at the old Rhyme, because I've played at the Opry as well.
Oh,
as the
yeah.
And when I was standing there and the Opry band took the instrumental break and I was just looking out into the audience, I kind of lost myself. And I was like, I can't believe I'm really here. And then all of a sudden it was my turn to come back in on my second verse of my song. And I was like, oh my goodness, what am I singing? but thank goodness I was able to
come from that. It had to come. Yep, it had to come from your head. And if you missed your mark, you'd be saying, go around again, guys.
Which I certainly could have done, and I know they would have. But no, it was just an overwhelming, exciting, like nothing else I'd ever experienced moment.
Your music has developed an especially strong audience overseas, including Ireland, where you recorded live. Why do you think your songs rooted so specifically in Oregon, ranch life, and American West connected so strongly with listeners in Ireland and Europe?
You know what's so funny is the Sheeran Family Band, who I had the pleasure of meeting and performing with and recording the live album with, as much as I love the Irish side of things, when I went over there and loved all the Irish side of the music and everything, but what had happened on how that even came about was I was playing in, it was when I was in Norway several years ago, and I was playing, opening a show, a few shows for the legendary, wonderful Don Williams, and they reached out to me and said that their parents were fans of mine, and would there be any chance that when I finished the tour that I was doing, could I stop one last place and stop by Ireland and perform a big show for their parents' 50th and surprise them and play with them. Well, I didn't know who the Sheeran Family Band was by any means, but I'd never been to Ireland, and I took the leap of faith and thought, oh, you know, because I had just played things recently for my parents' 50th wedding anniversary special and had just written the song After All. And so I took the leap of faith and went over there, and they were the best band, really just right up there with the Grand Ole Opry band.
Oh,
they
wow.
were all so very talented that we ended up playing several other tours together, and then I did the live album in Ireland. But, you know, I think what I would love people to know is that the are huge fans of classic country.
Absolutely.
Like real country, they like it more than the modern country.
Yep.
And so I have a home over there, and I'm blessed to have the opportunity to go and play and have
You have a home over there?
I call it my home just because people like me there.
Oh, okay. I thought maybe,
you know,
yeah.
A lot of those people open up their homes to me over there.
Absolutely.
So there
yep.
Yeah. And they treat you like family, really.
Right,
yeah,
right.
They really do. And they
absolutely.
And you're right. They love country music. So, Joni, in 2020, when you were included in the International Western Music Association Hall of Fame, what did that recognition mean to you after spending so much of your career defending and carrying forward Western music?
Well, I feel like I've written almost all the songs on my 14 albums. You know, very classic country, but certainly my roots are Western.
Yeah, but you were a defender of country music, you know?
Absolutely.
Especially when it got to be a little bit more rock and roll than it ever was.
Probably where some of the major labels and I parted ways in Nashville was because I wasn't going to change my ways.
Absolutely.
Record or change who I...
Good for you.
Yep.
I mean, that, like I said at the beginning of the interview as well, I want to pass with dignity and remember and have people remember me as a, you know, definitely Western classic country
absolutely
songwriter.
Yep.
And that's way more important to me than huge stardom. Well, I'm going to take this moment to put one out there for my daughter Olivia, who is an up-and-comer in country music and certainly is one of those traditional artists making her way. She was on the show The Road that Taylor Sheridan had out earlier this year. There were only five girls and five guys, and that was a national television show that she did pretty well in, and she was the only cowgirl in the bunch. And, you know, I was really proud that she stayed true to her roots and went out there on that stage with Keith Urban and and sang real country music.
Absolutely.
And held her own.
That's right. Yeah. And so, you know, I'm going to put in a plug that y'all maybe have a chance get out there and look up Olivia Harms and listen to some of her music.
Well,
she's one of those newcomers, I think.
Absolutely.
Oddly enough, the next question we have for you is about Olivia. And I remember helping Bob engineer you at Carlton Fun Days, and little Olivia was off to the side selling your CDs, and now she's grown up. So what does it mean to see another generation of your family carrying music forward while remaining connected to your Oregon roots?
Well, I can't say how blessed I feel that I have a son, Luke, and then my daughter Olivia is doing very well in the country music world. Has I think her third CD is coming out. She just yesterday released a song called Riding in the Sky, which is a play on Riders in the Sky, but a whole new rendition of it. Very country. I suggest maybe you even try to look that up and pop it in on the show if you can.
Absolutely.
It's a great new song, and she and I have started writing quite a bit together.
Oh.
And we wrote that song together.
Excellent.
And, she is doing very well, and I couldn't be more proud to see the direction she's going. She knows who she is and what she is, where she comes from. And so I think if there's anybody in the female side of the new up-and-coming country artist, she is one that's going to carry on the female side of that. And
so the Portland Sound Legacy Project is built around preserving the stories behind Oregon's music before the history of those memories disappear. That's our main job here. When future listeners hear your recordings many years from now, what do you hope they understand about Joni Harms, Oregon, and the Western way of life that produced these songs?
Well, just follow your heart. Anybody that is maybe listening to this and having a desire of being a recording artist, always be true to yourself. That's such an important thing, I think. Don't try to be don't try to be Garth Brooks or Dolly Parton or any of the ones we've been talking about here, because there's already been one of them. You need to be your unique self and bring out some brand new music and a brand new style. Use the instrumental pieces of a band that makes you happy and makes your music shine. And I hope that when they listen to me, that they understand that my music totally comes from my heart, and I am singing about things that I love and mean the world to me. And, when I'm long gone, I hope that some of my music can still be listened to and mean something to somebody.
In a few minutes, you're going to walk on stage and do a two-hour show. What are you hoping the audience feels when they hear the songs live today?
Well, I just hope that it makes them smile. I hope it brings back some memories. I hope it makes them feel encouraged in this crazy life that we're living in right now, because there's so much that's hard to understand and kind of scary, even, if you will. But I would like my songs to give them hope and make them ready for whatever happens tomorrow.
So, Joni, thank you for giving the Portland Legacy Project time before your performance and for helping us preserve your Oregon music history, one story at a time.
We will be including music from today's live performance, which will become part of the larger Portland Sound Legacy Project program, documenting Joni Harms' music history and career.
And I again want to thank Joni Harms for participating in this interview.
Yes, but thank you. A total pleasure.
Absolutely. You are a professional.
Well, I want to thank, real quick, too, Aurora Vineyards for letting us do our interview out here.
Absolutely.
And Robert and Michael, what a pleasure to visit with you guys today. Thank you so much for including me on this show, and I hope we can keep in touch and do it again sometime.
I'm Robert Davis with Michael LeClaire. This is Portland Sound Legacy on KBOO Radio, preserving Oregon music history and partnership with Portland Music Insider, one story at a time. Joni Harms, thank you again for participating, and have a wonderful show.
Great. Thank you guys again.
You're listening to community-supported KBOO Portland since 1968 at 90.7 FM, 104.3 FM Corvallis, 91.9 FM Hood River, and streaming online at kboo.fm/listen-now. As a listener-supported nonprofit, it's our members who keep us on the air with your ongoing donations. So please continue to support us by going to kboo.com/donate or text KBOO to 44321 to donate now.